My name is John Maynard. I'm a retired military intelligence analyst. I retired in 1980. I was in the military for 21 years. I started out with the Army Intelligence Security Agency as an analyst. Went on from there to work for several different organizations within the military and ended up with the DIA at the last of my career. And was an administrator there, in charge of most of the documents for the Requirements and Evaluation Division. As far as being aware of what was in the intelligence world for UFO and extraterrestrial, I guess it was early on in my career in the early 60s, some of the radio communications that I was analyzing for the Army Security Agency were a little bit more than just the normal type of traffic. I think at that point when I became too curious is when they decided to let me go. I went on from there to investigate on my own different aspects of what was going on. When I got to Europe, I was approached by a few of the counterintelligence people there that knew, had information on my background as far as analysis goes, and became involved in what was the drug trafficking, to look at and see where people were moving drugs back and forth as far as the military was concerned. And at the same time, I ran across the UFO problems that people were having, particularly sightings in Europe and things like that. I did preliminary investigations for these people and turned reports in of what was, what people were saying, what was going on. I was worked in Okinawa, and we were analyzing traffic patterns for the Chinese at that particular time. And every once in a while, I would run across an anomaly that wasn't really within the pattern of the type of traffic that would be known for setting up networks within the military confines. And when questioning, here we've got something brand new, what is it? I would always be pushed off to the side and say, well, you don't need to worry about that and things like that. But I just can't let it go, or never could, and I still don't. I pursue it to the nth degree as far as, without getting myself in trouble. But I did that time that I found out that there was more to these communications than was normal, and that they were not basically earthbound.
And these
Most of the traffic became anomalous as it went on. The further you dug in it, the more you noticed that it didn't belong with the normal traffic that was being broadcast.
And you found it?
I couldn't trace any particular origin. And that's what got me really interested in where this is coming from. And knowing a few friends that worked in the communications department, I sought, their guidance on which way it was going. I guess that was my downfall, because they weren't quite as good friends as I thought they were. And
what did you learn from that?
Well, basically that the communications really wasn't coming from within China itself. It was coming from another location, but they would not really divulge it. And I, one of my friends just kind of pointed at me off to the side and threw his thumb up in the air, and I said, is that a good sign or not? And he said, no. And I just left it at that, and we went on. And then in private, very private talks, he admitted that they were not earthbound signals. Since we really didn't have a space program that was, that would be moving that kind of traffic, nor did we have the communication systems and satellites at that particular time that would, I'm talking about the late 50s, early 60s.
Okay. Yes.
So that, as far as time frame goes, it was, had to be something else besides just us. I mean, the amount of satellites that are up there, I mean, Sputnik hadn't been up that long, and neither had the American satellites as far as, you know, using them. I think that was really my downfall as far as that, because I came to the point of, you know, realization that it was not, you know, basically, it had to have been extraterrestrial. So that they found a way to get rid of me, and they did it very well.
So then you went from...
And since we weren't police, and I was just some other American coming along with a friend, we would get all kinds of information out of these people. They were more than willing to speak, but when it came to officials from the government, the police, and things like that, they just clammed up tight. They were afraid. When it was someone else, they would open up. And we get quite a bit of information about the sightings. We get drawings of what the vehicles looked like, whether they landed or not, whether they were... they saw any people with them, you know, extraterrestrials, things like that. And it just made an exciting career for the next 2 years while I was over there.
Who were you making these reports for during this
time? Basically, they were going to the CIA, some to the DIA, and some to the Air Force, OSI, the Office of Special Intelligence. What they were using the information for, I never learned.
Subject?
Well, there's several different projects I ran across later in my years in the when I was in Turkey in the mid-70s, 76, 77, 70, early 78 when I left. I was an administrator. Worked for NATO, Land Southeast Headquarters. I became very important. I had some very good Turkish friends. Went scuba diving with them, some other things. And he would talk about the eastern part of Turkey as being a great UFO place. And I just asked him point blank. I said, "What do you mean a great UFO place?" He said, "Oh, we have sightings out there all the time. Never reported." So I inquired with a couple of my Turkish military friends, and finally got one general to actually admit. He said, "Oh, yeah, that's a great area. If you want to see UFOs, I'll take you out there sometime." Well, they sent me back. Two times. But with the same results. But by the third time, Colonel Corso was getting the picture that, you know, I was just being a dupe. I was being sent there to, you know, harass him about this stuff. And he made a comment that was really funny at that particular point. I didn't really connect it with anything until later. He says, "You have no idea at all what we're about, do you?" And I told him, "No, sir, I don't." He says, "Well, someday the technology will be out there that has been totally back-engineered." Went right over my head at that particular point. But I just told him, "Yes, sir," and off I went like a good little private to wherever I was supposed to go. And I didn't tell anybody what he had told me. I just kept it in my mind. And I reported him that Colonel Corso promptly just dismissed me from his office. And they just left it at that. Now, what they were trying to get was something entirely different. I had a requisition for certain types of material that Colonel Corso supposedly had.
What was that about?
For write-ups of engineering projects. That happens all the time in the Pentagon. Materials are kept very tightly by the owner or the owners of a particular document, a particular set of material, a particular set of documents that were ready to be used for some whatever the particular course was. It's within the documents, there was always something that pertained to, not all documents, but some documents pertained to extraterrestrials. They were code-worded. A normal person reading it may not catch it. Go right on beyond them. These were top-secret documents. Most of them are still classified. A lot of them pertain to Salt 1, Salt 2. The Strategic Arms Limitation Treaties with Russia. It's the National Intelligence Photographic Center. You can correct me on that later, or whatever. And we would get pictures in of the supposedly AVM or satellite areas that picked up on the Soviets, what they were building sites. And once in a while, an anomaly would show up on the picture that didn't belong there. A round object, a triangular object. They were not markings put on the photograph that indicate some place or anything like that. These were above ground. They were not part of the picture itself. Anomalies came up in certain photographs and things that we received in our office at DIA, and we always thought they were interesting. And it came from, I'm not exactly sure the acronym, I don't remember it exactly, but it's NIPC, which I believe was the National Intelligence Photographic Center, over on Hayes Street right there in Arlington. And we used to joke about them, things like that, but you knew that they were not part of something that was placed on the photograph or the imagery to be as an image, like a marker or indications, things like that. That was not a normal type of object that was used, particularly the oblong ones or the circles or the triangular ones. But they weren't, the triangles were kind of funny with a rounded corner on the tail end of it or something. But these were taken most generally with the Talent Keyhole satellite, which was KH-11, KH-12s.
Mm-hmm. And they would show these objects, these UFOs in them?
Yeah, they would show them. There would be objects within from the TK-11 and TK-12 shots that were taken that showed the anomalies. Sometimes you could actually track it photograph for photograph as it moved across the ground so that you knew that there was, It wasn't an object that would be, you know, like a marker for something, because it would have stayed steady at the point or whatever it was that you knew it moved. I did have one rather interesting incident, not in an organization that I belonged to as far as the DIA was there, but it was an office put within my area. So since it was in my area of realm of security, I received the code name to go in there and you know, look at the office. And it was called Omni. And Omni Project was really and then who would reproduce this? Because here's this brand new project. And guess what it is? A radar satellite. And I remember after that all settled down and everything else, I was talking with one of the sergeants over there in the little showroom they had that they had built for this. And they were getting ready to pack everything up and move to their own area. I noticed the satellite's positionings. I said, now this is supposed to be a system that tracks radar anomalies on Earth, right? You know, the whole thing, the movement. Yep, that's what it does. And he says, and why are half of them pointed towards the outer space? Towards the moon, towards areas that are just blank space? Well, I don't know. It was a reply. He says, never thought about it. I says, well, at least half of those satellites you got up there aren't looking at Earth. I said, what are they looking for? He says, well, you got to have need to know about that. I said, I see. In other words, who's coming? He says, we don't know. End of subject. Well, this was the new radar system. The satellite system was put on for the Joint Chiefs of Staff to show them what technology had now come up to and how we could track movement around the Earth with these satellites and people and airplanes and ships and whatever could be tracked. I just thought it rather odd that they also were tracking stuff in outer space. I did work with the Camp David Accords and assigning the SR-71s, the Blackbird, on mapping the Sinai in that. There were several little small reportings at that particular time that the Blackbird had been accompanied by something that wasn't from this Earth. You know, the maps and that. But what was the biggest interesting thing, you know, is when the flights were made. And they come down and they come back with the traffic patterns and the photographs and everything else that were taken of the Sinai, which is probably one of the most ever complete composites of photographs ever taken of the Sinai. That they would show anomalies that weren't part of the terrain, weren't part of the people, weren't part of the atmosphere. Well, in intelligence, compartmentalization is probably the whole thing. There's a real big misnomer out here in the civilian world about classification. There are basically three classifications: confidential, secret, and top secret. And that's it. It doesn't go any higher than top. They come up and they call about Umbra, and they call about this one, Omni, and they called about TK, Talent Keyhole, and other projects like that. But people have to realize that you know, I had Umbra documents that were only secret, not just top secret. But it was not the same, you know, people. When it comes to kind of get you into the background of what intelligence, you know, how they break things down, they keep pretty much each organization an island unto itself. You don't have cross-departmentalization a lot within the programs. If I have, which is the most common one known out here today, an Umbra clearance, which people say, well, that's so high above top secret. No, it's not. It's a compartment. Strictly a compartment. It's not more. Top secret is as high as you go. We got ultra top. No, you don't. Ultra is another compartment. Has something entirely different to do than it basically does with the president. So you can't fool around with it. So that's it. You have islands under yourself. Each one does their own particular type of analysis. The one I worked in, we were called requirements and evaluations. We were the ones that made the determination to fly the birds out of Wallops Island or somewhere else to go up and put a satellite up. DC-2, the other one. I can't remember exactly what they were about because we very seldom named the names of what they were. It was a divisional setup. DC-2 is one. We were DC-3. There was a DC-4 and there was a DC-5. And I'd have to really dig back into my background papers to give you the exact name for each one. That's how compartmentalized they become. One of them did strictly analysis. That's all they did. And they would feed it to us in the requirements. But we didn't really see all that they did. We didn't see all the material they did. They just gave us the finished product. And we would look at the finished product and then make our determinations of what we're going to do from there. And that's basically the way it is. Omni Project, which was the radar satellite. Was an island unto itself. You didn't have an Omni stamp on your badge. You didn't get into their office. Period. End of subject. Same thing with, you know, with people with TK or many other things. OMRA, Umbra, Ultra. Same running down the line. NRO, National Reconnaissance Office. basically run by the Air Force. The reconnaissance office, from my understanding of people that I've had contacts with since I retired, has taken on a lot more responsibility, particularly towards UFO and extraterrestrial activities. Almost you could say that they picked up where Blue Book dropped off. Blue Book was basically an Air Force project, a satellite project for themselves. It was really tried to be killed when they stopped Blue Book and they did some other things and finally fell under the purview of the National Reconnaissance Office. Now, it is basically a joint service, but it is run by the Air Force and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They have a very ominous job. Not too much is really ever known about exactly what they do. But they're running the successor to the SR-71. Which is supposed to be a Delta-type aircraft capable of Los Angeles to London in about 18 minutes. So it goes near space, low orbit. That's pretty quick.
Imagery.
Well, satellite imagery has pretty much gone to the background. You've still got Talon Keyhole. They've still got Omni. They've got a couple others up there now that, you know, I don't even know the code names for anymore. But most of the reconnaissance is done by aircraft.
And what have you learned about?
As far as anti-gravity, they've been working on it for a long, long time. I know that. Anti-gravity, no. Basically what I've seen is basically the magnetic pulse engine. It has a very unique signature when it flies. It has normal type fuel, but it also has a magnetic pulse setup to it. And the signature, if you've heard it, soap on a rope type of contrail behind it. A government is widespread, as everybody knows. I mean, it's into everybody's pockets and everybody's life all over the place, and the same thing holds true for the UFO, extraterrestrial, if you want to look at it that way. But very, very few people really know the full knowledge of what's going on. It's held very tightly within black covert operations. If you want to take a good close look at some of the background on it, you can go to civilian organizations outside of NASA, which are direct contracts for NASA, like Dryden Industries. Why are they flying all the now, flying the SR-71s on reconnaissance using Navy pilots? What are they looking at? What is NASA looking at, you know, when you think about that? Why are they doing these particular things? They're not using it for training, that's for one thing. Within the organization with the, at the executive level, I would dare say that the National Security Advisor, when he comes on board, is fairly well treated as in the know. From the top at NSA. Still limited because he's only an appointee. And at that particular point, the appointee at the CIA is the same way. They'll have knowledge, but very limited knowledge. It'll be within some people down within the black covert areas. Will have very specific information about what's going on, what an extraterrestrial people go. Other organizations, NRO, as we mentioned, National Reconnaissance Office, work in that particular area. They picked up basically all of the stuff from Project Blue Book. How they treat it is a good question. Not very much is known about the NRO. It's one of those organizations that's so low profile, with actually open statements in the public when it's stated. Anytime the question comes up, only strictly, you know, an entity that does reconnaissance in the Air Force, period. Well, why would, you know, questions come out, but not normal as to normal public knowledge. It leaves a lot of questions. But as far as UFO and intelligence and extraterrestrial goes, it's right at the top. And I would say that the president has such limited knowledge of it. I know Carter did not have any knowledge whatsoever. And I worked right there with the organization, President Carter's organization. So, you know, they keep it pretty secret.
Why do you think it's being kept?
I think they made a mistake at Roswell. Rather than admitting it, they covered it. And they covered it because, like my grandmother told me, she says, UFO and extraterrestrial activity has been going on a lot longer than this government will allow to admit. She says, I have known of incidents in the early 1900s when she was 18 years old about extraterrestrial and UFO sightings and stuff like that. So, you know, it's been going on a lot longer. We're finding out that it's gone on a lot longer than that now. I thought it was comical the way Bush, George W., threw the ball into Cheney's court of anybody who would probably know more than anybody else would be Cheney. He has some very interesting knowledge.
What if you...
I've talked with people in corporate entities who don't... Atlantic Research Corporation is one of the big ones. Not very often heard about. It's an insider, beltway bandit, if you want to call it that. Very low profile. Mostly has all of its work done with intelligence. And that. TRW, Johnson Controls, Honeywell, all of them at some point or another became involved with the intelligence field, certain works, activities that were contracted out to them. Some of Phil Corso's early back engineering projects, if you will look into those. Atlantic Research was one of them, way back. Entities that were created out of people in the Pentagon to become a quote-unquote beltway bandit. Received projects, grants, and monies to do certain projects that were so highly classified, even though, you know, there was only a top secret, but so compartmentalized that, you know, only about four people would know what was going on. So, you know, was that tightly controlled? You would have to look at corporations that were started by people who retired from the military. Take Bobby Inman and his little oversight group out there in California. Some other things like that. So, you know, we would ask the question, who really is controlling JPL? You know, why was JPL started? Other things, corporations at Livermore, Ames Laboratories, Fort Detrick. Some very interesting things come out of Fort Detrick. And Harry Diamond Laboratories. Been around for a long, long time. But you don't hear much about them because they're all basically military contractors. And in a particular specialty. Some are bio, some are high tech. I don't know if you've ever seen any back engineering notes, how they do it, and stuff like that. Very unique. You can get an engineer to tell you, you know, how they do it and the specific notes that you do. You take it forward from somebody's notes, and you can build the item just from the back engineering notes. And, you know, got to take it apart to find out how it works.
And you think this?
I think some stuff was done out of Roswell, yes. The crashes and other crashes that they had in the 50s that they picked up on out in New Mexico and out in Texas. Some of the southwest areas. There was a crash up in Canada in the mid-50s. And kept very, very hush-hush. There was definitely some engineering projects determined from those things. And see who we could meet. There's a new project that I picked up on with HARP that's being done through the Navy, where they've scarfed up huge amounts of land in western Nevada near and around Lake Tahoe. There was this scarf up of land at White Mountain down in Arizona. That involves that very large array system that they're using. Are all connected to HARP. They all work under the electro fields. What is it? ELF? No, they call it. Connected up with the very large array now going in Hawaii, so that you have a triangular position set up where they can do almost anything in space. They want to, but they can do a lot more to the ionosphere of this planet than they realize. And it makes you wonder why they're doing such things. You know, what's out there that they have to have such elaborate protection type activities going on? Because that's basically what they are. Interesting question about weapons in space. It's not basically known, but I think we can go back to a comment that was made by one of the astronauts when he stepped on the moon. It was the day after they got there. And it was the original flight. And he says, "You're right. They're already here." They got out on the airways. I know several people who had recorded it. But the remark was very unique because it was quickly taken out of all other tapes. It was public broadcast when it was repeats. That particular point never showed up again. Weapons in space is still a big enigma. Black covert operations have always been trying to do something like that. Basically, Star Wars, as Reagan started it, is a big boondoggle. Most of it didn't exist. It was just all on paper. Laser weapons, well, now that's a whole different story. There's brand new leaps and bounds been made in laser field. Not only cutting, but pulsed laser. Which basically destroys anything it hits. But down as far as a hand size, not quite yet. I think the closest thing they call it is that the nickname is railgun. And which is done on a magnetic pulse. Very fast little weapon.
Do you think then that we are...
I'm sure we do, that we have... weapons in space. There's probably no doubt in my mind about it. They were trying to develop them long before Star Wars became an entity, back in the late 60s, early 70s. Nixon wanted something along that line to produce weapons for space, and the project started then. Not Nixon as per se, the individual himself, but in his administration. People wanted it done. There was a fear then that of something out there. And that was when the first ones came out about the asteroids impacting Earth. And it really didn't become a heavy project or knowledgeable with people until very recently. But apparently we had some rather close calls back then. A lot closer than what they call a close call today. So it became a very big concern. Asteroids, UFOs, people coming from other places. That particular issue. So when Star Wars was brought out as an idea, which was before Reagan actually, and incorporated into his administration, it became pretty much a window dressing, as one people would call it. But there was a lot of truth behind what they were trying to do. They knew the basic principle of what they wanted to do. They wanted a weapon system they could put in space that would stop a ballistic missile. That was the concept. Now, if that ballistic missile happened to be coming from another direction other than earthbound, could it do the same thing? Or was it a ballistic missile? No. Concepts were there. Ideas were there. Paranoia was also there within the government. Yeah. At certain levels, you could feel it. You knew it was happening. Would they tell the truth about it? I doubt it. Maybe some year. Maybe your project will tell them. Yeah, we're ready to speak up. People to speak, that's what it's going to take.
That's right.
I guess Britain and the United States and Canada were the biggest party to the whole thing. They got the Australians involved with it later on. Some of the CETO people, Southeast Treaty Organization people, Japan, Taiwan, Philippines, those people, that has pretty much gone by the wayside now because they're reporting in their mainstream medias now about UFO sightings and things like that, where it was kept very tightly held before. The media is very one-sided when it comes to reporting. If they're Democratic, they report the Democratic and slam the Republican. If they're Republican, it's the vice versa. If it's an independent, they slam them all. But you don't hear them becoming, how can you put it? They don't step on the other person's toes when it comes to things that would be controversial, like UFO extraterrestrial. There's been too many sightings that have hit the mainstream, but they died very quickly. Why did they die? There was more interest going on and for the media to follow up on, but they just flat refused to do it. Why did they? Were they pulled by strings from behind? I don't know. I can't say. And they're not saying either. So, you know, it's difficult. Goes right back to the same thing with these Beltway bandits. You know, can you get them to say something? No. That's where their bread and butter is. You know, they're not going to step on their own toes, punch themselves in the face, whatever. But and the truth is, they have hidden things like UFO and extraterrestrial information from us for years. Not just the current era, but back before the 1900s. So, you know, it's there. It's about time for them to just come forward and say, hey, this is it.
Very good.
But this is why we did it.
Great, thank you.